Professor Charlesworth, are you with us? Normally, she's replying to emails, but not here. So I'm not.
No, I'm here.
Yes,
I just
you are there
because I now have to remember whether I make the Zoom the PowerPoint, the full talk first, and then Zoom. Or it's the other way around, I think. I think I have to do share screen
so
first.
Maybe you just introduce someone that doesn't need to be introduced, I guess. So Professor Charlesworth is joining us from Edinburgh. So she has so many things. She has done so many things that if I can just cover like 1% of them, I will need to take all the 15 minutes. So just a few things. So she's a member of the Royal Society of Edinburgh, the Royal Society Sensu Stricto, and this year she was elected to the National Academy of Science in the USA. I think they took a little bit too much time to get this. So she's received many, many honors, and today she's gonna talk about fishes and depositing sex chromosome of guppies. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Can you hear me? And thank you for the invitation. I'm sorry to be in my kitchen in Edinburgh, not in Paris, but that's how it is when you get old. Yes, it's a fish, but it's not just any old fish. I will try to explain why we study the guppy, and in particular, that it's what I'm going to call a non-canonical sex chromosome system. And perhaps we haven't heard very much about those during this talk, except in the back of the minds of people doing theory. So what I mean by a canonical pair is obviously very, very familiar to everybody. Just a regular XY pair like in humans, where we've got a large region of Y chromosome that doesn't recombine with the X. And in some organisms, like mammals, there's a pseudo-autosomal region, which is physically small and has a high recombination rate. And this figure at the bottom is intended to show that high recombination rate in a limited region in males and low recombination rate throughout most of the chromosome in males. And then in females, a low recombination rate, but plenty of crossovers, maybe one occurring randomly across a large region, and then perhaps a pericentromeric region near the centromere where you don't have any recombination. And in a situation like this, as we all know, we'll have Y-specific variants, which are mutations of various kinds arising on the Y which don't cross over onto the X, including mutations that cause degeneration or even loss of Y-linked genes, and perhaps even loss of the male determining factor. So eventually you can lose the Y chromosome. So the canonical view, I'm going to coin the term canonical model for how these things evolve, is that you have an initially recombining pair of chromosomes, and then a male determining factor, if we're talking about an XY system, evolves, and suppressed recombination evolves, either through selection favoring closer linkage of something like sexually antagonistic variants to the male determining factor, or various models, which I'm going to just, for brevity, call creep of regions adjacent to the pseudo-autosomal region. But of course, as Stephen Wright already outlined, so I can be brief, there are other models as well. Existence of a non-recombining region doesn't mean it evolved in this sort of way. You could have a male determining factor that appeared or arose within a region that was already non-recombining, like a pericentromeric region, as Stephen outlined. You could also have a male determining factor that appeared by a duplication causing a local region of non-pairing, which would perhaps locally not recombine and maybe would expand by the processes in the first sort of category. And another one which has been studied in some frogs and in a stickleback species is that we could have two species that differ by their male determining factor, different chromosomes, as often is the case in fish, a turnover event, which I'll talk about later if I get time. And they might have a different arrangement on the chromosome in question between the two species. And if one enters the other species by introgression, then the two chromosomes could differ by an inversion. And if this introgression causes a change in the recipient species over to the chromosome, the sex determiner from that other species, it could produce a non-recombining region. This may well happen. So why study the guppy? The reason it's not just any old fish, although fish sex chromosomes are undoubtedly fascinating, the guppy is interesting because it is a species that does have sexually antagonistic polymorphisms maintained in natural populations. And so for that first category of models, it may be interesting to study the guppy and ask whether those sexually antagonistic polymorphisms are indeed doing anything in the way of changing the recombination patterns between the X and Y, causing closer linkage or less recombination. These are in natural populations, and there's a lot of evidence that the Y chromosome is disproportionately involved in those polymorphisms, which I don't have time to go into. And the region does indeed have a Y-link region with low recombination. The Y and the X are, in some views, different. Here's a picture from a very nice paper showing the Y quite a bit bigger than the X, as is fairly typical of young sex chromosomes, in fact, because the Y perhaps has acquired a lot of repetitive sequences that the X hasn't. So the question is, has this canonical process gone on in the guppy? Do we have any evidence, or is one of the other processes involved? So as I say, the guppy has been considered a model system for studying the evolution of suppressed recombination, and it's been considered a canonical XY system. But there are some differences from the canonical systems. The guppy Y is not degenerated. In males, crossovers occur very much like Stephen described in his rumex species, only at the tips of chromosomes. In guppy, this is male-specific pattern, unlike the rumex. The XY pair of the guppy has therefore got a large XY region, but recombination is not completely absent from the region. So I'll show you evidence for these statements. This is the fact that the guppy is not, Y is not degenerated. This is just an example. We have 12 different populations with similar results. This is pool seek data, and this is coverage of SNPs. And this shows males and females. In both cases, they have the same coverage, very similar. There are some regions with lower coverage, not surprisingly, but those are, again, the same in the two sexes. And I'll come back to this later. But in the region, which I've called the XY region, that doesn't recombine much between the X and Y, still there's no coverage difference. So that's a major difference from the canonical sex chromosomes that several people have described, like Daniel Jeffries, using low coverage to detect sex-linked regions. We couldn't do that in the guppy. So I told you that crossovers occur in a very defined pattern during male meiosis, and this was established by cytogenetics, by these Russian scientists, beautiful work showing that crossovers detected cytologically are confined to the tips of chromosomes. The blue show the XY pair and the pink show the autosomes. And it's not that different Most chromosomes show that pattern. Since we started working on the guppy, we've been doing genetic mapping, and I'm just showing you the male map here, which you can see agrees very closely with the cytogenetics, and you can see a very physically limited pseudo-autosomal region and a physically large XY region. This is from 11 different natural populations, parents captured in the wild and mated, and the genetic map estimated using microsatellites. And we have a lot more data, which I didn't show you, from SNPs. And it all gives the same pattern. The other chromosomes give the same pattern as well, and I just I'm not showing them because the cytogenetics is clear. We agree with the cytogenetics. It looks here, you might think there's a little bit of recombination, but I'll show you that in the next slide. That's the very occasional recombination that we do see in the what I'm calling the XY region. This is just one family where we can define the haplotypes, the X and Y haplotypes of the male parent, it's a small family, only 8 males and 14 females, but that defines those two haplotypes. And this one individual, here is a column show different individuals. Here's an individual that should be female because he inherited all these markers from his sire's X haplotype. But when you come here, he inherited his sire's Y haplotype. So we do have a recombinant it's in the supposedly fully sex-linked region, but it's not complete. And all of the other evidence suggests the same thing. Here's a bit more evidence. This is pooled data again. In natural populations, there are ones from high predation and low predation populations, which are thought to have possibly evolved different recombination rates on the sex chromosome. And this is showing synonymous site diversity, so that these are the same genes compared in all individuals from a population. And it's showing it relative, the sex chromosome variants relative to autosomal ones. So this is showing you that, rather surprisingly, the females generally have higher diversity than the autosomes. These values are greater than zero, but the males even more so. And so that's suggesting that these presumably reasonably neutral sequences, which we're monitoring, are showing high polymorphism, higher on the in males than females. And that's consistent with the sexually antagonistic polymorphism hypothesis in a region of low recombination. The guppy XY region does recombine, but it's a region of fairly rare recombination. So that's encouraging for the sexually antagonistic polymorphism hypothesis, but we don't, as you saw in the previous slide of the genetic mapping, we don't see any difference in the pseudo-autosomal boundary between different populations. We've got high and low predation from several different rivers, and we see the same pseudo-autosomal boundary. So what we think is that the guppy has a small sex-determining region, which is in linkage disequilibrium with the rest of the what I'm calling the XY region. And maybe there's enough recombination that we could identify where that male determining region is. And this is an attempt to do that from these different populations, looking at variants which in the females don't have any variants, looking at sites that don't have any variants in females, but they do in males. And we do see these kind of male-specific variants, and you can see that they clustered in the region where we expect the sex-determining locus to be. But if you look at the top panel, this is just saying out of those 12 populations, how many of them have that polymorphism as a male-specific polymorphism. And you can see that there's no site where we find all 12. So there's nothing consistently showing the signal that you expect for a male-determining variant. That's why I think it must be small. In addition, as you can see, there's some confusion here in the right-hand side, and we think that's just assembly errors, even though the guppy genome has been assembled using MacBio sequencing and Hi-C, and this is based on that information. It still seems to be some assembly errors. So this is a summary of what we think the guppy is like. Maybe there's a male-determining factor in a male-determining region that doesn't recombine, a male-specific Y. It does have a highly recombining PAR, but it may also have some recombination, perhaps in a limited region or perhaps at rare, low frequencies right across the XY region. And that's why I say it's non-canonical. It's this region is still recombining. It doesn't matter whether those crossover events are localized here or occur sometimes here and sometimes there across the region. In any case, it's preventing, is enough recombination to prevent genetic degeneration. So it's plausible that the guppy would have a small non-recombining region because its relatives are very different. And I think that that indicates it's arisen by a recent turnover event. Let me explain briefly. Both Judith Manck's group and my group, and Judith Manck's group published first, so we didn't publish, found that the related species, closely related, most closely related, have very degenerated Y chromosomes. And you can determine the Y chromosome by looking at coverage, analysis of coverage. And indeed, we did so. This shows the coverage of the sex chromosome ratio in males is half that in females, and the autosomes are very respectable and have the same coverage in both sexes. So it's plausible that the guppy arose by a turnover event, and indeed other species in this group of fish have their sex-determining regions on different chromosomes, but the micropacilia, it's the same chromosome. There are two ways this could have happened, by a turnover, as I just mentioned, a recent turnover in the guppy. It would have to be a male-determining factor arising on an X and creating the new Y. And as Stephen explained, if it did arise on the X, because of the pattern of crossovers in male meiosis, this would instantly create something that is transmitted with a Y-linked pattern. So that's one hypothesis. Another possibility is that the guppy situation, the non-canonical recombining, rarely recombining XY region, lasted for a long time, and then the micropacilia species suddenly stopped recombining for whatever reason and then degenerated. We can't test this because we can't estimate the XY divergence and find out when this happened because there's nothing left in the way of genes to use for comparing XY divergence in micropacilia. Perhaps it could be discovered from understanding how long degeneration genetic degeneration takes. Maybe this isn't enough time, and maybe Ricardo will be talking about that, or maybe it will become clear from theoretical considerations. But I must say, the ideas about degeneration that we've heard from Thomas Lenormand, for instance, make me wonder if degeneration rates couldn't be very different according to different circumstances, and it might be impossible to make a general prediction. I just want to come back to this attempt to find the sex-determining markers or sex-linked, fully sex-linked markers and the sex-determining region. This is a very complicated slide, and it's only meant to give you an overall picture to show that everybody is finding the same. This was our analysis in 2019. We found some sort of signal in this region, but signals elsewhere with a small sample of individuals. Bigger samples were studied by Manck's group in more natural samples, And they found the right region, but with a very confused picture. Again, it, with two peaks of signal. This is just one example from ours, again, showing these two peaks of signal that I showed you before. So it's really very unclear, but presumably somewhere in this already small region, there's something that we can't detect as the sex-determining region. As I showed you before, this is a region with low coverage, but it's low coverage in both sexes. And I think the reason we're all having such trouble is that this is a region with repetitive sequences, and the signals that I've been showing you are for all sites. And in fact, a lot of them are for non-coding sequences. When you look at coding sequences, there's a lot fewer of these red SNPs associated with maleness versus femaleness. So to conclude, we still don't know if the Guppy XY pair has a completely non-recombining region. It's pretty small. But we do see evidence for linkage disequilibrium with it across the whole chromosome, consistent with the presence of sexually antagonistic polymorphisms, but not showing any difference in the genetic maps or in the boundary of the pseudo-autosomal region associated with any possible sexually antagonistic variants. I have various reasons for thinking that those results I just showed you are not due to things like sexing errors. I haven't got time to explain those. I don't think different populations have different sex-determining genes, but they could. I think there are assembly errors. I don't think there are different Y haplotypes as there are in some of the Micropacilia species. Our data don't suggest that, but I can't exclude it absolutely. So in a way, the Guppy has a non-canonical sex chromosome because it's recombining across much of the even the, what I call the XY region, even if rarely. But I think it relates to the canonical theory of sexually antagonistic polymorphisms for animals. In the left-hand part is really talking about species with a change from a hermaphrodite ancestor where we definitely must have two mutations and sexual antagonism between them is highly likely. But in animals, we would have a male determining factor and a sexually antagonistic factor that would potentially drive selection for, create selection for closer linkage, and you might get closer linkage. So the Guppy could fall into that category. But of course, you either evolve suppressed recombination in that situation, or you evolve sex-limited expression. And in fact, all the classical work on the Guppy suggested, clearly in fact showed, that there is sex-limited expression of the male color polymorphisms. And perhaps that's why it hasn't evolved any difference in recombination, despite perhaps the presence of sexual antagonistic polymorphisms on the chromosome in question. So I would just like to thank the people that I acknowledged at the beginning who did all the work, and particularly, I didn't mention at the beginning, the people who collected the fish in Trinidad. Here you can see a picture. You can see they look a bit exhausted. It sounds lovely to go and do field work in Trinidad, but actually it was absolutely exhausting. Or else they're maybe looking down and nervous because there are some nasty snakes there in the water.